Now, Meet the Press. Monitor brings you this prize-winning interview program produced by Lawrence E. Spivak, ready for the spontaneous, unrehearsed conference of four of America's top news reporters whose questions are not necessarily a reflection of their point of view, but maybe their way of getting a story. Here's the moderator of Meet the Press, Ned Brooks.
Welcome once again to Meet the Press. During the 6 weeks that the new Congress has been in session, one issue has become paramount: our military power as compared with that of the Soviet Union. The answer holds the key to our very survival. Our position in the struggle for supremacy in the field of guided missiles has become the chief point of disagreement. Administration spokesmen say that the progress has been satisfactory. Indeed, they say outstanding. Critics on the other side say that the program has been sharply limited by budget considerations and that we are falling dangerously behind. The leading critic is Senator Stuart Symington, Democrat of Missouri, who is our guest today. He is a member both of the Senate Armed Services Committee and the Space and Astronautics Committee. He served as the first Secretary of the Air Force when that position was created in 1947. He then was elected to the Senate in 1952, and he was reelected last year with the largest majority, percentage-wise, in the history of the state. Senator Symington often is mentioned as a possibility for the Democratic nomination for president in 1960. And now seated around the press table, ready to interview Senator Symington, are Marquis Childs of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, May Craig of the Portland, Maine Press-Herald, Charles Cordry of United Press International, and Lawrence E. Spivak, our regular member of the Meet the Press panel. Now, Senator Symington, if you're ready, we'll start the questions with Mr. Spivak.
Senator Symington, Secretary McElroy is quoted as saying recently that the United States would have a squadron of intercontinental ballistic missiles by January of next year. Now, I know you take issue with that. When do you think we will have one?
As to when we will have a squadron, Mr. Spivak, I don't think I should say. But when a statement is made that we would have one by January of 1960, then on the basis of the people's right to know the facts, I thought it was necessary to say that isn't correct.
You believe that we will not have a squadron by January 1960?
I don't believe it. I know it.
Do you think we will have any ICBMs ready in place to fire by January 1st, 1960.
I think the president said that we would have a missile operational this year, and I have never disagreed with that statement.
Senator, I'd like to take up one or two other things that Secretary McElroy has said, with which I think you're in disagreement, and I'd like to know why. He said we have no evidence of any Soviet ICBM currently operational. Do you agree or disagree with that?
As to whether or not we have any Soviet, I would say that's classified. If he wants to make that statement, I wouldn't argue with it.
Would you make that statement?
Myself?
Yes.
I would not make that statement.
Senator, President Eisenhower said the other day that our missile program was remarkable and was going forward as rapidly as possible. Now, you say the opposite. Can you give the American people any good reason why they should accept your estimates of the situation rather than the president's?
I think that we have here a problem as to whether research and development and production are the same things. In other words, if we are working hard in research and development, that's all right. But if we don't interpret it into production, then it doesn't mean anything fundamentally from the standpoint of our military strength. And I believe it's fair to say that now the Secretary of Defense has stated that we plan to pass over within a relatively short time long-range missile superiority to the Soviets. Last January, people in high office said we plan to close the gap. That's when I said that I thought that they ought to tell the truth about this situation, which was we planned to let the gap widen. Now, I believe it's clear that we do plan to let the gap widen, and I think that's most unfortunate from the standpoint of the security of the United States.
I don't quite understand. The president says our progress is remarkable, that we're going forward as rapidly as possible. You take exception to that. You might understand that he isn't wrong, but he's just talking about different things.
Well, when he says we're going forward as rapidly as possible, he can't mean that we're making as many missiles as we could with the present setup. Well, we could make a great many more. He may say that we're going forward as rapidly as possible because he believes we're spending as much money as we should in the missile field. That's his opinion. I don't agree with that.
But do you think we're going forward as rapid as possible or as rapidly as necessary?
I know that we're not, because we could make a great many more missiles with the same setup if we wanted to. On this program, on this station, it was said recently by somebody who's making missiles that we could make twice as many with the same setup if we wanted to make them.
Mr. Cordray.
Senator Symington, supposing that you were President Symington at this moment, how much would you increase defense spending and where would you put the extra effort?
Well, the first thing that I would do would be to start molding the defenses of the United States on the basis of progress and stop molding them on the basis of tradition. There are many things that, in my opinion, we will not use that we are building and putting a great deal of money in case we were unfortunate and ran into World War III. There are three things that this country needs in order, in my opinion, to be secure. The first is we have to have the strength, if we are hit, to get up off the ground and retaliate in turn and destroy the possible enemy. The second point is that we have to be sure that not only we and our allies know that we have that power, but that also that the possible enemy knows we have it. And the third is that we have to be able to fight effectively, efficiently, and I would hope successfully, a limited or peripheral war based on our commitments around the world. Now, I believe that in those three categories that we are lacking, especially in the first and the third. If we're lacking in the first, that's known to our possible enemy. And I think there are things that we should build. Now, when you get into the money situation, it's very difficult at this stage in the Congress to say exactly how much money is needed. You can talk in units. I would start immediately to disperse better our missile bases. I would start immediately to spend money to make those bases harder to hit. The word is harden those bases. And I would start immediately to build more long-range missiles. I would also start building a great deal more submarines than we plan at this time. And I would start from a standpoint of limited war to spend some of the money that's been appropriated by the Congress a year ago almost for additional airlift in order to give us more modernity to fight a limited war. That's where I would put the money. As to the figures, let's see what the Appropriation Committee's come up with.
Well, it would be bound to run more than the proposed amounts of almost $41 billion, would it not?
Well, I believe that we would have to spend more money, and I want to point out to you that every report that's been made, the Gaither report, the report made by Nelson Rockefeller, the Ellis Johnson reports of Johns Hopkins state and affirm that we should spend a great deal more money. Now, every citizen today spends 63 cents per day per capita for defense. For example, if you spend a nickel more than that, just 5 cents more per citizen per day, you could get the type and character of defense that that Mr. Rockefeller recommended so heartily to the president.
Mrs. Craig.
Well, Senator, I'm not quite clear. Would you impose new taxes to give us defense if necessary, or don't you think it would be necessary?
I believe that we could save a great deal of money if we reorganized the Pentagon building and if we implemented the Unification Act, which we passed, the Reorganization Act, last spring. I also think that we could save a great deal of money if we'd straighten out this differences of authority in the missile field. On the other hand, if in order to be secure, we need more taxes, I'd be for more taxes. I agree with Mr. Baruch. There's no sense in being the richest man in the graveyard.
Well, now let me ask you another thing. Last year, Congress appropriated a lot of money or authorized it, and the president didn't spend it. Is there any way that Congress can make him spend it when Congress thinks he should spend it for defense?
Well, that's a good question, Ms. Craig. Last year, we appropriated $1.3 billion, of which 58% hasn't been spent at all. Frankly, I don't know how we can make him spend that money if he doesn't want to do it.
Isn't it true that you gave Mr. Truman money and he put it in the drawer and didn't spend it too?
I believe that in the case of the Democratic administration and in the case of the Republican administration, that money was appropriated by the Congress which was not spent. I know it's true last year, and I believe it was true in previous years.
Well, explain this to me. I believe it is true that constitutionally Congress must provide for the common defense. Is there no way you can do that?
This is a matter where there is a difference of opinion among constitutional lawyers as to whether or not the president is forced to spend the money appropriated by the Congress.
Do you believe there is stirring now in the Pentagon and the White House a movement to increase our spending for defense?
I know that there are going to be recommendations to increase our dispersal of missiles, which is an unfortunate current situation in the present planning, to increase the hardening of those bases and also to increase the production of missiles. I hope the American people realize the import of what the Secretary of Defense has said. Within a few years, Mr. Khrushchev could press a button, and as a result of that, hundreds of these missiles would immediately start off to destroy our capacity to retaliate. And if he had enough of those, especially in that we have no planes on air alert, he could destroy our capacity to retaliate. That is the situation which voluntarily we apparently plan to have our country be in within a relatively short time.
Now, you spoke of being in favor of more nuclear missile shooting submarines. Is there any way to make the administration let loose some of those that you authorized?
No, Mrs. Craig. I think that last year they planned five, and we gave them the money for four more, and they've agreed to go ahead with one more. I think they should at least do that and more besides in that field.
Mr. Childs.
Senator, I'd like to come back to Mr. Spivak's question about your challenge to the President of the United States with his great military reputation. There is so much secrecy in all these matters, and you yourself on this program have used the word classified once or twice. How can you claim to have the facts to challenge the president? Where do you get your facts?
My information comes to me as a member of the Senate Armed Services Committee, as a member of the Space Committee, and as a member of the Senate Subcommittee on Military Investigation, of which Senator Linda Johnson is the chairman. To the best of my knowledge, I have access to all the information in this field. At least that is what we're told by the administration.
But you don't have more than the president or Secretary McElroy. You don't.
I don't have more, I'm sure of that.
This matter of a president and his authority, Senator, as was pointed out in the introduction, you have said, of course, that you're not a candidate for president, but you are mentioned invariably among the three or four who are candidates. Now, in getting bipartisan support for this crusade of yours, would it help if that were not true?
Well, of course, the way you put the question, it's a little hard to answer, but I'll say this. I knew when I made my decision, regardless, to give the American people the truth with respect to our national defense, and to deny any statements that I thought were misleading or inaccurate, I knew that I would be heavily criticized. And one of the criticisms that I'm getting on all sides is the one which by inference you refer to. If it's correct, I'm sorry, but I intend to continue to do what I have been doing in recent weeks. I intend to continue to inform the American people the truth in this matter, because frankly, I believe it involves their freedom and their survival.
Well, I wondered if it would make it easier for you, and something that you obviously put of paramount importance, if you took yourself completely out of consideration. Is that possible?
Well, by inference, you say that I'm a candidate for the presidency. I'm not a candidate for the presidency, and I don't think that has much to do with my desire or anything to do with my desire to give the American people the facts. For many years now, we have been getting different information in classified hearings before the Senate Armed Services Committee than has been released to the American people. I believe you know something about the details on that. And I think it's time, because this Russian situation is getting increasingly delicate. This Berlin situation, for example, is perhaps the most serious thing that's happened since World War II, in my opinion, not excepting Korea. Therefore, I intend to give the information out.
Mr. Spivak.
Senator, as far as the American people are concerned, this is a thing that disturbs me and I think a great many other people because of the conflicting opinions that we have. Now, why should the American people listen to you rather than to the President and to Mr. McElroy?
Well, they
tells us we're in good shape.
I don't think that that anybody would agree that we're in good shape if in this new missile, which we've realized is the new art, we now admit that we're going to let them have many times as many as we have in a very few years. I believe that what we're doing now is tuning our defenses in production and operations to a subsonic era, when actually we've gotten into a supersonic era. And when you realize first that we plan to pass over a large preponderance, hundreds of more long-range missiles by plan to the Russians, which can only be done on the grounds that we can't afford it, and when at the same time we find that we have no true air alert of any kind over here for our bombers, which must retaliate after this country is hit against a complete alert that the Soviets have waiting for those bombers, then I think we're in very difficult shape. Therefore, we don't disagree on facts, to the best of my knowledge. We just disagree on whether that is a condition which justifies optimism or whether it's a condition that should result in a change in our military policy and posture.
Well, you say, but you have said that you don't even agree on facts. The Secretary said we'd have a squadron by January 1st. You say that's not so.
Well, he admitted that was incorrect.
No,
he admitted it was incorrect in
July.
And he's equally incorrect if he said it in January.
So that it isn't merely a difference of facts. Now, why do you think if you both get your facts from the same place, why do you think they're giving us facts that are inaccurate?
Well, I think the secretary, who is an honorable gentleman, was misinformed. And I would hope that, as a result of your asking the question, that he corrects himself and tells the American people the truth that we will not have a squadron of ICBMs by January 1st, 1960.
Well, do you both get your information from the same place?
Well, I don't know where he gets his from, but I know that we get ours from people, including him, that come over from the administration.
Well, you get your information from him.
A lot of it.
Well, then is it a question of coming to different conclusions from the same information?
No, he admitted that he made a mistake when he talked about a squadron by July 1st,
no,
and I'm sure that if you asked him that he would say that we will not have a squadron by January.
Well, what he changed it later, as I remember, to January 1st, and you take exception to that.
That's right. And I'm sure that he would agree that I was right in the exception that I took.
Well, now, do you think that the balance of military power has shifted to the Soviet Union?
No, but I agree with General LeMay, who warned us in 1956, as did others, that if we didn't do something, it might shift very soon. I think he used the year 1959, and we're in 1959. And the testimony of Dr. von Braun as to when we have to start before our condition is hopeless was very intriguing and interesting testimony. I'll say this, that pretty soon, unless we change our position and stop putting fiscal policies ahead of our defense strength requirements, and stop letting that place over there stumble along without any true unification, There will come a day when, on a program of this character, somebody who wants to give the people the facts will say, yes, we now are behind the Russians.
Well, Senator, I'd like to ask you the question you asked Dr. Von Braun. I'd like to get your answer to that, and that is, if we don't change our national approach now, how soon do you think it will be before our position is hopeless?
Well, you remember the question that was, and if you were at the hearing,
exactly
you saw that
question.
he was reticent about answering it at all. He finally said a decade.
That's right.
I think that he believes it would be considerably shorter than a decade.
What do you believe?
Well, I would say 5 years anyway.
Mr. Cordray.
Senator, do you think that it's significant that when you did ask Dr. Von Braun a question about missile production in Russia, he said, I know practically nothing about the production figures? Don't you think that the President of the United States and the Secretary of Defense would be somewhat greater authorities in view of Von Braun's testimony to your committee to that effect?
Once Dr. Von Braun made a very optimistic statement on a program, and I protested it to the Secretary of the Army and the Chief of Staff of the Army. And later on, he said publicly that he'd made a mistake. And the reason that he'd made it was that he didn't have access to classified information. Now, Dr. Von Braun, on this program not too long ago, or one like it, stated that we were 5 years behind, in his opinion. Intelligence is never positive. Hard intelligence isn't intelligence at all. If you know something, why, then you don't call it intelligence. But the fact is that the Secretary of Defense testified to us in a classified hearing, and then I got him to release the statement in an open hearing that the Pentagon building is operating on the basis of the fact that the Russians are doing what they say they are capable of doing. And if that's true, I don't understand what anybody is talking about, because if that's true, why did we let them get a 3-to-1 lead on us, which is the figure he used that I think was pretty low, but that's his figure, 3-to-1 advantage on us in the long-range missile field.
In that connection, his 3-to-1 figure varies from your 4-to-1 figure, doesn't
it? That is correct.
Do you suggest that there has been a dressing down of our intelligence estimates by people who are not intelligence experts?
Well, what I asked Secretary McElroy was that could the director of the Central Intelligence Agency be overruled in the
field
of intelligence?
Well, sir, do you think he was overruled?
And Secretary McElroy said that he didn't know, but he felt if there was any major disagreement, it would go to the president.
Mrs. Craig.
Senator, we have to make some choice as to what we put brains and time and money into. Would you have a priority between space and missiles? Do you regard them as related?
I would have I think they are very related, but I would look to a solution of this organizational dilemma that they're now in pretty soon. We've got ARPER, we've got NASA, we've got Dr. Killian, we've got the Atomic Energy Commission, we've got the Department of Defense, and the three component parts, and nobody seems to quite know what anybody else is supposed to do. As a result, unless we work this out pretty soon, especially as NASA is now a contractual agency, which NAC was not, we're going to lose a good many billion dollars a year in the effort. I think that the best thing to do is to fix the organization up as soon as possible.
Congressman Price, who is chairman of research and development for the Congressional Joint Atomic, is going to start hearing soon on developing a nuclear aircraft. Do you think we should have put money into that?
Yes, I do. I think it's very important that we should go ahead with that development, which unfortunately we didn't do in the past.
Where do you put it in the priority?
I couldn't put a thermometer on it right now from that standpoint. I think the most important thing to do today is to start building more long-range missiles, Atlases and Titans as soon as they're ready, and Minutemen when they are ready. And also, at the same time, to put some planes on air alert. It amazes me how many Americans thought we had planes on air alert. A large percentage of planes. The truth is, based on the testimony before our committee, we haven't got any planes on air alert.
The president would not give any information the other day as to activity of Soviet submarines along our coast. But Jane's fighting ships in December said there'd been quite an upsurge of activity. What do you know about that?
I honestly don't know if there has been an upsurge. I know there's been activity.
Mr. Childs.
Senator, do you believe the recent claim of the Russian chief of staff who said before the 21st Party Congress in Moscow that they could pinpoint targets in this country but with their ICBMs?
Do I believe they could?
Yes.
Based on our efforts in that field, of course, the word pinpoint, Mr. Childs, can be... I don't know quite what you mean, they mean by pinpoint, but based on the area of the blast, I would say that inasmuch as we could do that ourselves, based on our tests, there's no reason to think that they couldn't also.
Well, you say based on our tests. What you've been saying to us on this program is that they can do it in actuality today. Is that correct, Senator?
Now, as far as this year is concerned, and what the Russians could do this year, I agree that we might be relatively even at this point this year. But what worries me is the voluntary statement by the Secretary of Defense that they would be many hundreds ahead of us in a relatively short time. Because regardless of what we can do experimentally or they can do experimentally, that isn't the point. The point is that we have enough production so that we have a true military defense posture.
Now, what about Khrushchev's claim that they are in serial production with our ICBM? Do you accept this as fact, too?
I do not know, but I'll say this, that I've had some very sharp surprises. We figured that they wouldn't have the bomb until 1953, and they had it in 1959. We did not know that they had hundreds of good MiG fighters at the start of the Korean War. When they first showed their strategic bomber, long-range strategic bomber, we said, well, they would only do that in prototypes. Well, later, or the next year, they flew more in one formation than we had in the Air Force. They've been very bad about many things as far as living up to what they said was concerned, but to the best of my knowledge, they have never said anything in a military weaponry way that they didn't come through with on the basis of the way they put it.
Mrs. Gregg and gentlemen, I don't think we're going to be able to cover this entire subject. We've covered a great deal in our allotted time. I'm sure that the panel has a great many more questions. Sorry to interrupt, but I see that our time is up.
Monitor's thanks to Senator Stuart Symington, Democrat of Missouri, and to the members of the Meet the Press panel for a stimulating and enlightening half hour. The panel today included Marquis Childs, May Craig, Charles Cordray, and the program's producer, Lawrence Bivak. And now, a personal word, if I may. Did you ever hear of a radio station that broadcasts nothing but noise? And I don't mean immoderate presentations of some types of music that you don't particularly like. I mean the kind of noise that's called jamming. And the communists have a lot of such stations contrived to keep agencies like Radio Free Europe off the air. You see, the Reds know that Radio Free Europe helps keep...